Webcasting around the world from the desert metropolis of Phoenix, Arizona, this is The Dividing Line. The Apostle Peter commanded Christians to be ready to give a defense for the hope that is within us, yet to give that answer with gentleness and reverence. Our host is Dr. James White, Director of Alpha and Omega Ministries and an elder at the Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church. This is a live program, and we invite your participation. If you'd like to talk with Dr. White, call now at 602-973-4602 or toll free across the United States. It's 1-877-753-3341. And now with today's topic, here is James White.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to The Dividing Line. Lots and lots and lots of stuff to do today, so I'm going to jump right into it. I have a bunch of material to cover in regards to a blog article posted by Steve Ray today. It is the clearest documentation of the fact that Steve Ray is a liar that I've ever seen in my life, and that is the exact term. It is documented, it is clear, and I can guarantee right now he'll never admit it. But before we get to that, a debate took place last week. Actually, three debates took place last week up in Toronto. And they involved Dave Hunt debating, as I recall, a Hindu and atheist, and then Shabir Ali. Now, I would never do something like that in the space of about 28 hours. Dave, I believe, is in his late 70s, early 80s, something like that. He recently had hip replacement surgery, I think. This is a clear indication that somebody needs to be able to tell him that's not wise, don't do that. But evidently there isn't anyone who can say no to Dave Hunt. And as a result, the cause of Christ suffers. And that's a shame. And someone who was at the debate has called in right at the beginning of the program, Neil up in Toronto. Hi, Neil.
Hi, Dr. White. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. So I understand Brother Dave wasn't looking real sprightly and spry during the course of this.
Unfortunately, he certainly wasn't. It have to cut him a bit of slack because of his age. You know,
oh, yeah.
28 hours. The hip replacement. His other hip was obviously bothering
mm-hmm.
because it was painful every time he stood up.
Yep.
And then they had him also preaching apparently on Sunday morning as well.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. Somebody has to be responsible for that. That's just foolishness.
Oh,
I'm 45 years of age, and I would not put myself through that. Yep. And to do that, I cannot even begin to understand. But anyway, tell us a little bit about the context. I've been being told that this was a really weird context for a Muslim-Christian debate.
Yeah, the original title apparently was supposed to be Christianity versus Islam. Then I understand Shabir Ali had a change to the Quran versus the Bible, which he would have loved to do.
Mm-hmm.
But when Dave got to speak, he was first. He did not realize that the topic had been changed, which was quite ironic because I get their email.
Yep.
And on it, it was showing pray for Dave. Then the topic Saturday night was the Quran versus the Bible.
Yep, I got the same email.
Yeah, okay. Well, when he started in, he just did a total trashing and vitriolic attack on Islam,
mm-hmm.
some documentation, and I was there with Steve Bartimaeus. We went together.
Right.
And we just sort of looked at each other. I made comment to myself and notes, you know, somewhere through it, because especially when Shabir was rebutting that I want to yell Allah Akbar, he was doing such a great job, he almost could have turned me into a Muslim. But it was like Dave was almost the ramblings of a deranged man at times.
Mm.
Like he just didn't really know what he was talking about.
And sadly, Shabir is very, very good at, I would just describe it as judo debating. In judo, you use the force of the other person as your main way of doing things. He's very, very good at turning anything someone says in that way. So, yeah, I expected that part.
Yeah, he just opened the door for Shabir to go into the Old Testament, all the violent passages there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yep.
And he made a very interesting comment that Samson probably was the first suicide killer.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah,
yeah. Uh-huh. You know, he killed more than 9/11. I have to really give him credit for that.
Oh yeah, yeah. No kidding.
What
I meant by context originally though was this was in a Catholic high school.
It was in a Roman Catholic high school, right? which is kind of mind-boggling considering Dave Hunt's attitude towards Catholicism and also for a Roman Muslim to see possibly statues and everything.
No kidding, but now, I also, Steve told me that the person who put this on is a former evangelical who became a Roman Catholic?
No, the moderator was.
The moderator was?
Yeah, Michael Korn. He did an excellent job on the moderation.
Okay.
I was talking to him before it, and I said, you know, I'm not a Catholic. I'm offended by some of the books that got there, like by Tex Mar, Dave Cloud, Jack Chick Tracks. And he says, he just shrugged his shoulders and said, they probably won't have them back again.
Well, so who was behind all this?
It's a young man called Paul McGregor, zealous for the Lord. He may be a modern-day Apollos and needs a Priscilla and Aquila to go alongside him.
Well, but I'm just confused because I know the book table could not possibly have been Dave's because
no,
Dave...
No, it wasn't. I think it's the group that does the Jack Chick materials here. They offered both Steve and I Jack Chick track, and Steve was a little more gracious in returning it down. I just told him I'm not a Jack Chick fan. And he said, well, people come into my phone me and say, hey, I got saved, and I prevented myself from asking got saved from what to what, but they go, it was, the Lord was merciful, there were very few Muslims there, so, but we had some interaction, though, with a couple of Muslims after the debate was over, and I also gave Shabir a copy of Piper's book, Seeing and Savoring Jesus Christ. And, you know, I told him, you know, hey, you know, we congratulated him, told him we were embarrassed by what Dave Hunt did.
Mm-hmm.
And I just told him, hey, we're praying that you'll come to know the real truth and that, hey, you'd make a great preacher. So he laughed. So.
Well, you know, I guess I've started a trend. I've given Shabir books as a gift in each one of our debates. So I guess his library is probably doing quite well.
I think so, yeah. See, he had read most of Dave Hunt's stuff, too.
Well, yeah, I expected he would.
Dave Hunt admitted that he just maybe saw one or two of Shabir's debates.
So, what was the final closing statements? What was Shabir saying and what was Dave saying?
Well, it's hard to say. From my perspective, Dave wasn't too bad in his last 5 minutes because he did get into the gospel a bit then.
Mm-hmm.
But he missed so many opportunities when Shabir brought up in his 15-minute section about there being no real witnesses for the crucifixion.
Mm.
Well, I mean, you just jump into 1 Corinthians 15:3 through 6 and then bring in to Tacitus and Josephus, could have preached the gospel for his 5 minutes on that. Never jumped into it at all.
No.
I get the feeling that, well, most people, and I would include myself when I first got into Muslim ministry, you see the similarities to the two religions, and as you study them both more, the divide just keeps getting wider and wider all the time. He is like one of these who attacks it vitriolically and somehow does not seem to be able to separate the follower of whether it's Islam, Catholicism, or whatever from the belief system.
Right, right.
And, you know, that makes a significant difference. Hey, my Muslim contacts know what I believe, but they also consider me friends and that get along well with them.
Mm-hmm, right.
And Steve's the same way because we go out together. So.
Right, right. Well... Neil, I really appreciate what you and Steve did. I appreciate you being there. I know it could not have been easy to sit through, but now were there cameras recording this?
Yes, they are. You think you can order it all from the Brian Call website? That's what they said. I've been trying. I've been having trouble getting onto Hotmail because that's the one where I get my Brian Call stuff on. I haven't been able to get on. I'm having problems with it today, and to see whether they're putting up any comments about the debates or not.
I get the same updates from Brian Call, and I've not seen anything. So
yeah, and you know, both the Lord God reigns, and we had a good chance to talk to the two Muslim fellows, both from the Whitby area, which is about 40 minutes from Toronto, where the debate was held. One was from Pakistan, and this Syed, he was very, very angry, and he said, because I grew up in India, you know, you're taught to respect your elders, and he said, it's all I could do to control myself from shouting at him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't blame him. I would have felt the same way.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into that. Well, thank you very much for the phone call today,
we'll
Neil.
Carry on. I think Steve's going to be calling in, too. So.
Well, going to Appreciate the report.
Okay, take care.
Thanks
God
a lot.
Bless. Right. I'll get back to listening to the rest of the program.
Thank you very much.
The winners from the Catholic side.
All right,
okay.
Thank you. God bless.
All right, bye-bye.
All right. Well, Steve, you can sort of hold off if you'd like, because I've got a bunch I need to cover here. But I did want to give everybody a report. I do not rejoice in what took place. I was very clear when it first came out. I felt that this was just utter foolishness. I called for Dave not to do it. The fact that he is very elderly and physically infirm. I hope that when I get that age, there will be somebody around who has enough wisdom to be able to say to me, you're trying to do too much. You need to slow down. You need to heal up. You need to do one debate at a time. You need to have enough time for preparation. Something. And honestly, this is part of, Dave brought this on himself. Because Dave Hunt's attitude is, there's no one who can really teach me anything. This was clearly, just go look at the videos on YouTube on What Love Is This. Because he mentions the fact that, well, I had all these people, I had friends tell me, I shouldn't write this book because I don't know what I'm talking about. Exactly. And what Dave Hunt thinks is if people tell him he shouldn't be doing something, that's a sure sign from God that he should be. And that's not wise. And the results, well, are what we see here. So there you go. There's a report on that. I want to switch gears, however, because I got to my email this morning. Jane Swan had sent me an email linking me to Steve Ray's blog. I would have seen it once I started my RSS scanning, but sometimes a couple days go by, and I'm just too busy. I was teaching yesterday, and so I was focused on other things. And I ran across, thanks to Steve Ray, thanks to Jim Swan, Steve Ray's blog. And I read through the attack that he launched against yours truly. And it ends with Steve Ray saying, I always felt sorry for this man myself and often said it makes people who get too close feel like they need a shower. That's the kind of personal vitriolic ad hominem that is the essence of Steve Ray, the guy in the safari hat. I don't need to engage in that kind of ad hominem. These guys give me more than enough information to demonstrate that they are dishonest in and of themselves. And what this blog article is about about my series on Ignatius. And it's amazing to me that the title to the blog article is, was the anti-Catholic correct? I, of course, being the anti-Catholic on YouTube, was St. Ignatius a Reformed Baptist? Now, there seems to be a consistent methodology amongst the Roman Catholic apologists in the United States today. Patrick Madrid, Catholic Answers, Steve Ray, to purposefully and knowingly, with dishonorable intentions, lie about me and about what I believe, assuming that their people will not actually check out what I have to say. Going back to the Envoy article many moons ago, where I was lied about there in regards to my CRI article on the Council of Nicaea, and the mocking idea that the early church fathers were Baptists, something I never said. There was a footnote from a student of mine that said that Athanasius demonstrated a completely non-Roman Catholic perspective when he went against the established church and did so for decades on end and stood firm for the truth. That's not something that is a mark of Roman Catholicism, of course. And, of course, they then twisted that around. There seems to be a purposeful attempt to lie to their followers to keep them from listening to anything I have to say, to poison their minds. That, to me, is a sign that these men know that they cannot defend their position in a truthful manner, and so they have to use these kinds of tactics. The statement, was St. Ignatius Reformed Baptist, is a lie. And it's a lie. I'll show you how much it's a lie. Let me play to you the very beginning of my videos on Ignatius, and it also is going to help because I'm going to play William Albrecht's comments a little bit later in the program, and he makes reference to this too. Listen to what I actually said, and then listen to how Steve Ray lies about it, and how William Albrecht doesn't get it either. Here's what I had to say.
In this series of videos, I would like to provide you with a contrast between the kind of handling of the early church fathers that is rampant amongst Roman Catholic apologists and what I hope to be the appropriate handling of these same materials as I have presented in the past on the Dividing Line webcast. Specifically, I want to look at the writings of Ignatius, specifically his epistle to the Smyrnians, and the text that is so frequently used by Roman Catholic apologists to try to promote the idea that Ignatius himself believed in the concept of transubstantiation and things like that. I will contrast the comments of Steve Ray made on Catholic Answers with a presentation I made a number of years ago on the Dividing Line webcast. It was during a period of time when I was teaching for Golden Gate Baptist Theological Seminary. I was teaching a class, a special studies class on patristics. And so we're going to go through the text. I'm going to put the text on the screen for you so you can take a look at it. And also on my blog, I'm linking to the CCEL URL where you can look at both the English and Greek there as well. But I want to provide this opportunity of contrast. Because, you see, Roman Catholics, I really don't believe, can handle the early church fathers in a accurate fashion without letting dogma get in the way. If they keep dogma out, they're going to end up contradicting their own dogma. If they allow dogma to come in, they're going to end up misrepresenting the early church fathers. Only really Protestants can handle the early church fathers in an appropriate way because we don't have to turn them into something other than what they were. They were the early church fathers. They did not look like me. They certainly didn't look like what Roman Catholics look like today, even though you'll hear Ray make that claim that he had to become a Roman Catholic because they were clearly Catholic. And yet, none of these apostolic fathers believe what Ray believes about Mary, what Ray believes about transubstantiation, what Ray believes about the papacy. His standards are completely upside down and incoherent, which is why these folks struggle so much to debate these issues. But especially the examination of the actual text of Ignatius. It's going to take me a couple of videos to get it all in because it took me a while to cover it. But I hope you'll find this to be useful. But we need to first start.
Okay. So what did I say? What have I said on this program? What have I said in print, in books, in debates, for literally now decades? Have I ever said that everyone in the early church believed everything I believed the way I believe it? The answer, of course, is no. Anyone who says otherwise is a liar. That's a term. That's a word that speaks of people who are dishonest and who purposefully promote dishonesty. That's what a liar is. That's someone who knows they're lying and they lie anyways. That's a liar. I have never said that the early church father, all the early church fathers were Reformed Baptists. I've never said that they were Baptists. I said the early church fathers were who they were. They contradicted each other. They had different emphases. They had all sorts of different understandings and different viewpoints. But what I've also said is they were not Roman Catholics. Now, the bishops of Rome might fit into that category. But even then, the bishops of Rome did not believe many of the things that modern Roman Catholics do today. They were who they were. I can allow them to be who they were because I do not dogmatically make any assertions about what they allegedly believed. That's why I say I can handle them in a fair way, but Roman Catholics, because their dogmas say this is the universal consensus of the church, all the fathers taught this, blah, 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 they cannot handle the early church fathers in a fair manner that allows them to be who they were. One of us can handle them fairly, one of us cannot. That is what I was trying to say. Now, if Steve Ray actually watched my videos, then he had to have heard me say that. And that would make Steve Ray or if he didn't watch the videos, then he's guilty of linking to William Albrecht's videos. And yet, William Albrecht actually repeated the part where I said that. So that would make Steve Ray either way you go, the only way he's going to get around this, I can tell you right now, because I've figured out how this man operates. He's running around Israel right now, guiding a bunch of little old ladies through various Holy Land sites. That's how he makes his money. And they just, you know, hang on his every word, and he just, you know, wears his safari hat, and they follow him around. And so he doesn't have time really to do anything about this. But when he gets back, I doubt he's going to listen to even what I have to say here, of course, or even he might just glance through the blog article. But what he's going to say is, well, of course I didn't listen to that anti-Catholic half to say. I'm not going to waste my time with stuff like that. And so what does that prove us to us about Steve Ray? Well, how many times is he on Catholic Answers? How regularly is he on Catholic Answers? I mean, those of you who are honest Catholics who recognize that Ignatius does not use this terminology because that's a theology that had not yet developed, why aren't you folks calling into Catholic Answers and saying, you people are an embarrassment? Why aren't you doing that? Why is that left up to us? Doesn't this demonstrate that as long as it serves Mother Church, it's okay? You don't have any standards. I mean, I just got done. We just had a call on Dave Hunt. How many times have I criticized Dave Hunt? Dave Hunt and I would believe a lot of the same things about the Roman Catholic Church, but I have a standard that means that I need to criticize him when he misrepresents Rome, just the same way when he misrepresents me. Why don't you have those standards? I don't understand that. Well, yes, I do understand that, but it demonstrates something about the Roman Catholic system, doesn't it? It most assuredly does. So, by the way, before we look at, he links to William Albrecht, the Catholic legate, and he links to both of his responses. So I'm going to, since Steve Ray, Catholic apologist extraordinaire, has linked to these, I am going to play William Albrecht's responses, and I'm going to demonstrate that they are anything but responses. And if this is what Steve Ray, an Ignatius Press author, a man who makes films about the early church, a frequent guest presented as an expert on the early church by Catholic Answers, if this is what he thinks is a meaningful response to my series on Ignatius, where I went through that chapter to the Smyrnians phrase by phrase, using the original language, placing this as historical context, if he thinks this is the response, folks, put the gravestone over Catholic apologetics, it's over with. There isn't even a contest left. It's no wonder we can't get people to debate, because they have put their hands up in the air and said, we give up, we can't do this. That's what they're doing. This most amazing capitulation I have ever seen on the part of pretty much anybody is what you're seeing in this type of a situation. But before we take a look at that, I just note, if you want the most incredible tactics, I don't know, I could not look at myself in the mirror in the morning if I behave the way Steve Ray behaves. Because not only does he link to Albrecht, but then, look at this. By the way, a very capitalized, very reputable theologian wrote to me yesterday saying, I just wanted to bring to your attention James White's analysis of your use of Ignatius of Antioch. White's analysis may very well be the worst form of sophism I have ever heard. In fact, I began feeling really sorry for him. I was embarrassed for him. You should be proud of your work and the fact that your strongest critics wind up making your case even better. Keep up the good work. Any substance to that? No. Of course not. I have not seen one substantive reply anywhere to what I said about Ignatius. Not one Roman Catholic has gone into the original language of Ignatius. Not one of them has even shown the first knowledge of the difference between the Latin and the Greek of Ignatius. Not one of them has ever taught a class on Ignatius on the graduate level. Not one of them has a clue what in the world they're talking about. Not one of them. And here's this very reputable theologian. Now, one of two things is true. Either this is made up by Ray. It's possible. The man's very dishonest. Or this man, who has written to him, knows he could never defend what he's writing in debate. And he's not going to put himself in the position of having to do so. Who is this very reputable theologian? I'd like a name. I'd like to be able to contact him. Would this person like to come on the program? I will allow the very reputable theologian to come on the program. I'll give you 20 minutes uninterrupted. At your leisure, at your schedule, we will change the schedule of the dividing line, very reputable theologian, to fit your schedule. I will give you 20 minutes to make your case to demonstrate why it is embarrassing for me to have read Ignatius the way that I did, as long as you will then spend 40 minutes answering my questions based upon the Greek text of Ignatius. If you don't do it, you ain't very reputable, are you? Anybody want to take bets on whether that's going to happen? Nope, it won't happen. But the challenge is out there. Steve Ray, get your reputable theologian. We will give him 20 minutes, and we will air it live so that everybody who listens to this program can hear how dumb, how stupid, how embarrassing James White is. Here's your opportunity. Would Catholic Answers ever give me 20 uninterrupted minutes on Catholic Answers Live? What does that tell you, folks? One side has the truth, one side doesn't, and the other side knows it doesn't. That's the difference between us. All there is to it. So, anonymous theologians left aside now. Let's take a look at what William Albrecht had to say here. That's the opening of the video there. It's a very pretty little opening. I think probably did that because I had a nice pretty opening to mine. But let's listen to what William Albrecht had to say. He has two videos. They're not quite 10 minutes each. We should be able to get most of it in, depending upon how much time we have. Let's listen to what he has to say.
All right. I apologize for not having gotten this done a little earlier. I'm usually before recording videos for my YouTube account.
Now, just real briefly, remember, this is supposed to be a response to five videos on Ignatius. And if you remember the videos, they're on my YouTube account. I quote directly all of the chapter on the Smyrnians. It was about a, I think, 50-minute presentation I made back in 2004 on the subject of Ignatius. So let's how much of a response to what I really said? 50 minutes worth of discussion on Ignatius. Let's see how much of a response we get.
I ran out my transcript. Well, I've been sick for a few days so far, but now I'm here and I want to deal with a few things that James White has been up to once again. A little while back, James White posted a video series dealing with St. Ignatius of Antioch. And if you watch his video, said he criticizes Catholics in a very ugly manner.
Yeah, just like Steve Ray, I'm constantly saying that just dealing with Catholic apologists makes me want to take a shower. Like Steve Ray said about me today, is that what I do? I don't think so.
Excuse me. He even gives impersonations of us, and a little bit of a very
I impersonate Christopher. I impersonate Christopher Hitchens, not Catholic apologists.
Very, very rude manner. You know, James White sometimes lacks a lot of respect and needs to be put in his place, and that's
put
what
in
I'm
his
here
place.
For.
Ooh, that's
I
what he's here
defend
for.
The Catholic Church of Christ is founded, the Church of which the gates of hell will never prevail over. I'm here to defend it. I do my best to serve Christ in the fullest, and I believe that James White is very dishonest when it comes to the usage of the church policy, and I believe he has to be. You know, as a Protestant, James White is stuck in a rough position, you know. The other church did not believe or view the Bible in the way that he does. So it's rough for him to really read the early church without ripping them out of their context.
Now, that's my accusation against Roman Catholics. The difference is going to be I then go and I give you, in context, translated by myself if I need to, examples of what I'm saying. And that's the one thing we're not going to get from William what William believes. See, context for William is what modern Rome teaches. See, we think the word context means the context in which Ignatius wrote, in which he lived. That's not what context is for William. You need to understand that, or you're not going to understand what he's saying. Context for William is what I believe establishes the context of the entirety of church history. And so if you read anybody in church history disagrees with me, that means that you are taking them out of context. So the English language doesn't have any meaning. Context doesn't have any meaning. It's just been reworded, shall we say. And this, remember, folks, this, what does Steve Ray do? Does he defend himself? No. When he lied about Jerome, who defended him? Gary Machuda. He tried to defend himself on the 30,000 denominations thing, but melted down. He lied about Jerome Machuda. Now he's letting William Albrecht defend him on the Ignatius stuff. So this is what he says is a good response to what I said.
And, well, you know, I know that James White knows that the early church was not Protestant. So I do not, that is why I do not understand why he can rip them out of context the way he does. But anyway, we're going to touch upon the series in which he deals upon. He actually is attempting to make Steve Ray, a Catholic apologist whom I have spoken with, look bad. He's attempting to make Steve Ray look bad here, and I think I'm going to go ahead and try and lend Steve Ray a hand here, because I know he's really busy right now. And
he's really busy running around Israel, yeah.
I want to start off with this video, and we're going to cover all five of the videos in the relevant parts that we need to, the Jim Twight stunt on Ignatius. A minute and 28 seconds into the video, we hear Jim Twight make the accusation that Roman Catholics cannot handle the early church fathers in an accurate fashion. Then we hear that only really Protestants can handle the early church fathers.
Now, that's the section I just played for you. And what did I say? The reason being, Rome reads her dogmas into the early church. We don't have any dogmas that we have to read into the early church because of our view of authority in sola scriptura. Now listen, as after having said that, listen as William Albrecht gives us one of the clearest examples of reading your dogmas into the early church in the exact fashion that I talked about.
I couldn't help but laugh a little here. The early church, which believed in the primacy of the Pope, prayer to the saints, gave respect due to Mary, did not believe in the premillennial rapture, believed in the plural presence of Christ in the Eucharist, and the early church that gave us the Bible. Not the Protestant Bible lacking seven books, but the complete Bible. It's that early church that the Protestants can handle, right? That makes no sense whatsoever.
Now, did you hear that? This is the entire substance of William Albrecht. Is he says the early church believed what I believe. Remember the first video I played of him? He's standing up against the wall. He's sort of whispering. There's some cellophane crumpled down along the bottom somewhere. I don't know what's going on. But everyone, he'll walk out of the frame and play something and walk back into the frame. And he's sitting there hitting his hand. And he's going, the early church was Catholic and they believe what the Catholics believe. They believe exactly what I believe about the transubstantiation. And he's just doing all this stuff. That was the first one I ever saw of him. That's what he believes. He believes they believe in the primacy of the Pope. Now, how many times have we demonstrated that's not true? Ignatius writes to the church at Rome, not to the bishop at Rome. There is so much evidence. Cyprian and Stephen, Augustine and Zosimus, there's all this stuff. But that's just all out of context. That's just all out of context. But they believe what I believe. They believe what I believed about prayers to the saints. Same way that we and serious Roman Catholic scholarship recognizes that these things developed over time. A serious Roman Catholic scholarship isn't going to make this kind of argument, but William doesn't know that. And where in the world did he get pre-tribulational rapture? Could somebody tell me when in the world I've taught that? Hello? Hello? Anybody out there on this program a couple years ago, remember? I came out, finally defined an eschatology. It's called amillennialism, not premillennialism. You might want to do some homework, might want to do some research, might want to figure out what's going on there. But here's the whole point is, from his perspective, the early church looked exactly like Rome does today. And therefore, anyone who disagrees, you're misquoting and you're ripping out of context. Now, that means those words no longer have normative meaning. Because when I talk about ripping out of context, I actually demonstrate what a context is. I use the term context in the English language. We're not using the term context anymore. The term context now means, for William, what I believe. And so if you contradict what I believe, then you are doing so out of context. Now, is that rational? No, it makes no sense whatsoever. But that's what William is all about. This is the guy that Steve Ray is referring us to. Steve Ray thinks this is a great response. Did he listen to it? I don't know. Would it matter to Steve Ray? I don't know. Doubt it. That would require you to be actually concerned about truth and things like that. And I have no evidence whatsoever that Steve Ray is concerned about truth. So, I don't know. But that's what he's saying.
But it's no wonder why Jim Twight has never been able to deal with the early fathers in a cogent manner. In each one of my videos I have done, I have demonstrated that. James never dealt with any of the fathers that I mentioned that referred to the Eucharist being the substantial presence of Christ.
Now, anybody remember a dividing line where I spent a long time on Tertullian? I've still got the books sitting right over here. And we talked about Augustine, and there are entire videos up providing all these quotations. And again, he says, well, you misquoted Augustine. What he means by that is, you interpret Augustine differently than I do. That's the whole substance of it. And so when you make this kind of argumentation, it's called ipsa dixit. It's because I say so. I don't have to give you citations. I don't have to demonstrate that my reading of these early church fathers is fair to them in their context. I don't have to demonstrate that the meanings of the words that I give are the meanings that they use. I don't have to demonstrate any of that. It's because I say it, you are to believe it. Ipsa dixit. That's the argumentation.
The real presence. You never dealt with any of the fathers that I used, but also dealt with the papacy in the videos that I've used to respond to him. I hope people will go back and look at his videos and look at mine.
Yes, do so.
He avoids the fathers that are a problem to him and tries to twist those that have some ambiguity in them to his liking.
Now notice, twist, so on and so forth. If you're going to make those accusations, back him up. When he backs them up, I blow him out of the water because he doesn't deal with the early church fathers. He can't read the original languages. He doesn't have access to the resources that I have. And it's embarrassing. I'm sorry for William, but, you know, I was ready to just forget about William. I said in one of my videos last week, you know, you go to a certain point, then you let someone just do their thing, and you leave it to the listeners. If Steve Ray had not linked to him and said, ah, look at these awesome responses, I don't think I would have mentioned him once again. But since Steve Ray, Catholic Answers, special guest, et cetera, Ignatius author, has linked to him, well, then we need to hold William to the same standards that, well, everybody else needs to be held to.
Unfortunately, that hasn't worked for him either. In fact, I think James has such a difficult time admitting what he is wrong that he lets his own dogma blind him. A good instance of this is his wrenching St. Augustine out of context. But this isn't something novel. His hero, John Calvin, was the one who came up with the very arguments in the real presence that you hear in James White parodying. Unfortunately for James White, I've documented his errors in Augustine many times over, and I've shown him just how badly he not only misquoted Augustine, but how badly he used him out of context to try and disprove the Eucharist. I suggest anyone who listens to this video take notes.
Now, remember, what have we heard about Ignatius so far? Have we heard anything about the background of the letter to the Smyrnians? About the fact that, no, this isn't actually an anti-docetic diatribe, that this isn't his concern here? Have we heard any of that? Have we heard any substantive argumentation whatsoever so far, other than ipsa dixit, hey, I've refuted him over here? Remember Dave Armstrong last week? Remember how Dave Armstrong, his biggest argument against me is, I've written all these papers against James, and he doesn't refute any of them, so he just stands refuted. Well, now, here it is again. Here's the same situation coming up now with William Albrecht.
The arguments that James White uses have been used for years by him. He recycles his old arguments over and over, even if they've been refuted about a million times. My point is, the new modern-day era of Protestants copy White in his arguments almost verbatim. They refer to the Catholic Church as Rome, they use the term Sola Ecclesia, etc., etc. They're pretty much what I like to call white cronies. They have no original arguments of their own.
White cronies! Well, very proud to have provided information. Maybe, William, the reason that those arguments get repeated is because the vast majority of rational folks do not find responses like yours to be rational and to be meaningful and to be useful. Maybe that's why they get repeated. Not because they've been refuted. Because so far you've refuted absolutely positively nothing, and we're halfway through the first video. Nothing on Ignatius so far. Well, we can always hope.
Which is good for us, you know, because if James White is so easy to refute, it's good the ones that are coming out of the mold.
If I'm so easy to refute, why is there nobody on the phone line right now? Why isn't Steve Ray and Gary Machuda and William Albrecht and all these people just lining up to demonstrate my foolishness? Oh, because you hung up on that one guy. Yeah, how many minutes did I give him? 43 minutes? Something like that. The facts are so obvious here that it's hard to comment on.
Are pretty much recycling the same old arguments. They run out of arguments. They run out of ways to attack the Catholic Church. You've got to feel quite sorry if misrepresenting the early church fathers is the best that Protestantism can do. Then you've got to feel a little bit of pity. There's no way on earth, when you look into the early church, that you see anything remotely resembling modern-day or even ancient Protestantism, for that matter. But
what is ancient Protestantism?
That. Now let's go to examining Ignatius of Antioch.
There we go.
We're going to dissect Mr. White's videos and the locations that we disagree with.
Okay, we are 5 minutes into an eight. We've got 3 minutes left here. My presentation was 50 minutes long, and we are going to dissect what I had to say. And let me tell you right now, he only goes 3 minutes into the next one. We have a total of 6 minutes in response to 50, but it's a dissection of what I had to say.
All right. watching videos 1 and 2, we really have no issues at all. James White is pretty much reading Ignatius' words as they come.
No. Missed it! The first two videos establish the very context of the anti-docetic diatribe that is the second section of the letter to the Smyrnians. This is called establishing context. This is called doing exegesis. This is called being fair in reading what somebody else wrote a long time ago. That's what the first two are about. But the fact that he doesn't have anything to say about it demonstrates that he has no idea how to handle historical sources in any meaningful fashion at all.
It's a pure unadulterated attack against Gnosticism, a heresy that the Catholic Church was able to stamp out in the early goings.
Really?
Here's when things do get good, though.
Really? The Catholic Church, which, of course, remember, for him, he doesn't differentiate between modern Rome and ancient Catholic, of course. He's just using that term to refer to his own church. Why is it, then, that it's the Roman Catholic Church who today promotes as dogmas beliefs that originally appeared amongst the Gnostics regarding Mary, and especially about her perpetual virginity? Why is that? Why is those beliefs first found amongst the Gnostics if they were stamped out by the Roman Catholic Church? Always makes me wonder.
Nearly 4 minutes into video number 3, James White begins to use a certain quotation from Ignatius. Let us listen to the relevant quotation and listen to what James feels fit to add to it.
They touched him and believed, being close to united with his flesh and blood. Nothing about Eucharist here, nothing about transubstantiation, nothing at all.
Here James says we have nothing.
I think we got a quote. What was that? Maybe 20 seconds grand total? I'm playing his entire videos, and they quote 20 seconds. That's all he could do, because you don't want to put it in context, do you?
Nothing about Eucharist here. Well, I'll give you some credit here, James. You got that right. No one claims that this verse is speaking about the Eucharist. It's clear Ignatius is speaking about the resurrected Christ here.
And my point was that as we follow the language through Ignatius' own words, we discover that he is specifically addressing one particular subject. And it is Roman Catholics who have to read into those words concepts that would not have been relevant to the argument he was making. Folks, if you interpret somebody who is making an argument in such a way as to refute that argument, you are probably misinterpreting them. That was my point.
We've not gotten to the famous Eucharist verse yet, so I don't understand why you feel the necessity to add your little commentary here.
It's called context, William. Context. Demonstrating what comes before that gives the framework for the meaning of the actual text. It's called, this is the real meaning of context, William. I understand that you have come up with a different word, a different meaning for context. You fill the word context with a completely different concept. But if you'll go to a dictionary, you'll discover that what I was addressing was context. And notice how he said, I added something to Ignatius there. So in other words, if I comment on what Ignatius says, I'm adding to him. That's where he gets the misquoting, all this stuff. It's amazing, the double standard. He can do it, and he doesn't accuse himself of that. But if a Protestant even makes commentary on something, you are adding to what they said. See? The irrationality is absolutely astounding.
Close to 4 minutes into video number 4 on Ignatius, James White nearly rips Ignatius completely off the screen of your computer, so terribly distorting his words, and trying to convince you that Ignatius was not speaking of the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist, that all James really does is make himself look silly. There's no reading around what Ignatius says. Let me read it for you. I'll read it slowly. This is Ignatius. They abstain from the Eucharist. Who does? Well, as James White explains, the heretical teachers do. They abstain from the Eucharist and prayer. They abstain from both, notice. Because they refuse to acknowledge that the Eucharist is the flesh of our Savior Jesus Christ, which suffered for our sins and which the Father by His goodness raised up. So stop for a moment here. What is the Eucharist here? It is, as Ignatius says, it's the flesh of Jesus Christ. James White wants us to be fair to Ignatius, and we're going to be. We really are. James White, you're quite clever, I've got to admit, for not reading all of what Ignatius says. But we're going to read it all, because James White stops right at the verse and begins to twist Ignatius' words into a thousand different presses.
Now, let's just stop right there. What have we had a single fact presented? No, we've had accusation, groundless accusation after groundless accusation, without any documentation, any substantiation whatsoever. It's just throw out all this attack accuse me of everything in the sun, but don't bother to provide anything. Now, you'll notice he doesn't seem to recognize there's a difference between the Greek of Ignatius and the Latin version. The man just doesn't know. He is unschooled. He's untaught. He doesn't know. And so when I use the Greek rather than an expanded Latin, oh, I'm taking stuff out. Or if I don't quote all of Ignatius, even though I said at the beginning of the video we're going to deal with this one text, which is Letter to the Smyrnians, chapter 2, we're going to deal with one thing. So now the argument is, well, if you don't read all of Ignatius and you don't exegete all of Ignatius, then you're trying to hide something. I mean, every single video he has done, he could be accused of the exact same thing. It is called hypocrisy to use double standards like this. It is absolutely amazing.
Let's continue on right after that verse.
Now, does he respond to anything that I said about what this means in regards to why a docetic Gnostic would not partake of the supper? Does he even seem to understand what the argument is? I see no evidence of it. Do you? I do not see any evidence that William Albrecht hears what the argument was that Ignatius was making. He is so wedded to modern Rome, he's so wedded to what Rome says, that that's just all there is to it. He cannot see or hear anything beyond that.
Ignatius says, "Those, therefore, who speak against this gift of God incur death in the midst of their disputes. But it were better for them to treat it with respect, that they also might rise again. It is fitting, therefore, that you should keep aloof from such persons, and not to speak of them either in private or in public, but to give heed to the prophets, and above all, to the gospel, in which the passion of Christ has been revealed to us, and the resurrection has been fully proved. But avoid all divisions as the beginning of evils." Now, you stopped off with James White, did you? Would it be possible to try and prove that Ignatius was indeed not speaking of the Eucharist, in the sense of the real presence, the actual flesh of our Lord Jesus Christ? I don't think so at all.
Was there anything in he just quoted that's even slightly relevant to the argument that I made? There's nothing there at all. I mean, you just go on, you read something else out of Ignatius, you go, well, see, that just proves that this has to do with real presence. And again, though I've written to him and challenged him on this, William just assumes that real presence equals transubstantiation, the idea that you actually have to make that connection historically. You have to demonstrate that someone held to Aristotelian categories of accidents and presence and everything. That which on any scholarly level whatsoever has to be a part of the utilization of that terminology. Does he even care? No. In the second video, he actually tries to say, well, you know, they didn't actually, what he says, and we'll get to play it, what he says, well, yeah, they didn't use the term transubstantiation because that term hadn't been deployed yet. Deployed yet. Okay, but they believe the basic concept. So what you're saying is they held to Aristotelian categories of accidents and presence. They just hadn't developed this particular word yet. Is that what you're arguing? Do you really want to try to establish that? You really want to try to substantiate that? No, you don't have to substantiate that when you have ipsa dixit. It is because I say it is.
I listened to James' presentation of this passage over and over, and there's something I said at the very get-go of my communication with James White, the correspondence and videos and letters. Something I've said since the very beginning of speaking to James. I think that James White should have been a wrestler, because no one wrestles words out of context better than him. And I mean no one. He's the very best at it. So if you continue and you read Ignatius, you stop and see that he indeed was speaking of the Eucharist as a gift from God that heretics failed to treat with respect. Something that James White
Why did they fail to do so? Because they rejected the incarnation of Jesus Christ, therefore there cannot be a remembrance of a physical body of Christ, because he didn't have one. That is the concern of Ignatius. And who is paying attention to context? Who even shows an understanding of what the word context means? The wrestler James White or William Albrecht? That is, remember, if you're sitting there going, man, you just shouldn't be picking on this poor young guy. I'm not the one that posted his responses as being an example of good Catholic apologetics. That was Steve Ray, Catholic apologist, author, speaker. And when Roman Catholics who are serious about their faith want to start standing up and saying, we're tired of the road show of people like Steve Ray, then I'll applaud you. But as long as you keep your mouths shut and allow these people to get away with this stuff just because it serves Mother Church, then you will need to be held accountable for what these people are saying.
Simply avoids quoting. And I want to go more into this video in just a little moment here.
And that's the end of the first video. I had lots and lots and lots and lots of fun trying to track down all the videos today. It was really a joyous experience. And here's the second one. I don't know. I sense a contrast between the music and the substance, don't you?
But as I said a little moment ago, I think Jim Swite is incredible in the way he attempts to wrench the early church fathers out of context, in this case Ignatius. Towards the end of this video, we get treated with a wonderful little closing image from Jim Swite. This is the final video part.
Now, final video. How much interaction have we had so far? We have had one citation of a later portion, accusation, I was trying to hide this or something, where the Eucharist is seen as a gift and somehow this is supposed to be relevant. That's it. Nothing. No, I mean, if I'm so wrenching these things out of context, why can't you fill 40 minutes worth of time with all the examples of where I'm completely missing the context? Because I'm not. That's why I'm using the term context in the English sense. I don't know what language, William.
Five of the series. Jim Swite says, who then is able to examine the text of Ignatius fairly and fully? Roman Catholics, seeking to find their dogmatic teachings in ancient writings, or those who can allow the early writers to be the early writers? Let us remember what Jim said in one of his earlier videos.
Now, by the way, did Steve Ray hear that? He just quoted me, and yet Steve Ray uses as the title of his blog the idea that I'm asserting that Ignatius is Reformed Baptist. I'd play liar again, but don't have time.
It isn't Catholics that can use early church followers in their context. It is the Protestants that can actually read the church fathers in context. James White said that. Is this correct? It isn't correct. Ignatius did not have a concept of the Eucharist in the sense that John Calvin did.
Okay, did I ever say Ignatius had a concept of the Eucharist that identical to John Calvin? Did I say that? Is that in my videos anywhere? No, I did not say that. I allowed Ignatius to have Ignatius's view. I don't need him to have my view. I don't need him to have Calvin's view. If you can't hear that, William, you will never make a meaningful argument against my position. And rational folks, clear-thinking people, will recognize that. And you don't seem to realize you are utterly destroying your entire argument and your entire credibility if you cannot hear what it is I'm actually saying and respond to it.
James White, the Catholic Church has always understood the true meaning of the real presence.
Prove it.
The Church has always believed in the Eucharist as a substantial presence of Christ.
Prove it. So far, ipsa dixit, ipsa dixit, ipsa dixit. It's because I say it. I can't prove it for Ignatius. I just absolutely have to believe this. And if I don't believe this, I don't know what else I'm going to do. So I'm just going to keep repeating these things. If I repeat them often enough, I'll still believe them.
Not a mere spiritual or symbolic representation. But is this the only time Ignatius speaks of the Eucharist?
There's the end. We're going to go beyond this. But that's it, folks. That's the entirety of the interaction with my material at Ignatius. That's it. That's what Steve Ray says is a great response. If my material is so bad, you should be able to triple its length in demonstrating how stupid I am. But what did we get? Absolutely, positively, nothing. Nothing. Other than documentation that William Albrecht doesn't read church history very well, and Steve Ray is a very, very dishonest man.
No, it isn't. In fact, James never touches upon another famously quoted text by the...
See that? James never touches upon that. Well, William, you're wrong. Because if you had listened carefully, I was teaching an entire class on patristics, which meant reading all the way through Ignatius back then. How do you know I never touch on that? This is a common kind of argumentation. It's, you know, poisoning the well, trying to tell people that someone's lying to them or something like that. They're purposefully misleading you. All I presented in those videos was on Smyrnians, the Ignatius' epistle to Smyrnians. I did not even pretend to be covering all of Ignatius. This is a common form of bogus argumentation. People who use it have already lost the debate.
Great Ignatius, and many others for that matter. In this one, I want to cover Ignatius in his letter to the Romans, chapter 7. The prince of this world was...
Now, please know something. If you're going to be reading along with this, he's reading from the expanded Latin. He's not reading from just the Greek. I have here Michael Holmes' translation of this particular section. And this is what he's eventually going to get to. He reads for a long, long time, but eventually gets to this. Ignatius is on his way to Rome. Please note, when he wrote to the Romans, he did not write to the bishop. He mentioned the bishop of all the other churches. He writes to the church at Rome, not to the bishop at Rome, because there was no single bishop in Rome at this time. Even though William earlier said that, well, they all believed in the papal primacy, for some reason that didn't appear in this letter. And he is telling the Romans, don't get in the way of my martyrdom. I'm ready to die. And he says, my passionate love has been crucified, and there is no fire of material longing within me, but only water living and speaking in me, saying within me, come to the Father. I take no pleasure in corruptible food or the pleasures of this life. I want the bread of God, which is the flesh of Christ, who is of the seed of David, and for drink I want his blood, which is incorruptible love. Now, look at the text as it stands. Don't read your modern dogma into it. When he says, I want the bread of God, which is the flesh of Christ, who is of the seed of David, what does that mean? Does that mean I want to partake of the Mass and transubstantiation? Or is the fact that he mentions he is the seed of David, which he also did to the Smyrnians, a demonstration of the fact that Jesus Christ truly became flesh? That was his big apologetic concern. And when he says, for drink, I want his blood, does the next phrase say, which is transubstantiated in the Mass? No. He identifies this drink as incorruptible love. Not as a physical thing. Just as Augustine would say later, don't make ready tongue and mouth. If you have believed, you have eaten already. This is very consistent with what Ignatius says. Now, will William put it in a meaningful context?
Satan turned me away and corrupt my disposition towards God. Let none of you, therefore, who are in Rome, help him, rather be on my side, that is, on the side of God. Do not speak of Jesus Christ, and yet set your desires in the world. Let not envy find a dwelling place among you, nor even should I, when present with you, exhort you to it. Be persuaded to listen to me, but rather give credit to those things which I now write to you. For though I am alive while I write to you, yet I am eager to die. My love has been crucified, and there is no fire in me desiring to be fed. But there is within me a water that lives and speaks, saying to me inwardly, come to the Father. I have no delight in corruptible food, nor in the pleasures of this life. I desire the bread of God, the heavenly bread, the bread of life, which is the flesh of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, who became afterwards of the seed of David and Abraham. And I desire the drink of God, namely his blood, which is incorruptible love and eternal life.
Notice the expansion in the Latin over the much shorter version in the Greek.
Then in his letter to the Philadelphians, in a discourse on avoiding...
Well, see? Any commentary? Any placing in context? Any doing what you'd have to do if you really think that this has something to do with transubstantiation? What would you have to do to prove that? Where is the Aristotelian categories of accidents and presence? Where is it, William? If you're going to deal with these types of things, be honest with them. Where is the information? All he does is read it and just assumes, well, that sounds like what I believe, so it must be what I believe. There you go. There's the argumentation.
Heretics and schismatics. He tells us in chapter 4, this is Ignatius, take heed then to have but one Eucharist. For there is one flesh of our Lord Jesus Christ, and one cup to show forth the unity of his blood. One altar, as there is one bishop, along with the presbytery and deacons, my fellow servants, that so, whatsoever you do, you may do it according to the will of God. Yeah.
Now, notice, I just froze the video, and you can't see it this way, but if you go and look at it, he has capitalized the entirety of the term altar. And so what does he do? Just assumes, reads into that use, later concepts, later... You know what this is very much like? think about dividing lines we've done recently. Who does the exact same thing? Who takes a modern concept and wears it as glasses and then looks back in church history and reads everything into it? The Muslims. Since my ultimate authority, the Quran, says Jesus was not crucified, therefore I read church history and he wasn't. Since my ultimate authority, the Quran, says Jesus is not the Son of God, I look into church history and the New Testament must be corrupted. William Albrecht, since my ultimate authority says there's something called transubstantiation, I look into church history and I read it into every word I can find it and squeeze it into. It doesn't matter if the original writer would not have had a clue what in the world I was talking about, did not have the philosophical framework to have had these kinds of understandings, I'm gonna read it into it anyways. This is the abuse of church history.
That Mr. White Ignatius was a Protestant. That must be read through Protestant lenses, right?
Did you hear that? Did you hear that? Let me see if I can, I don't know how well this is going to work backing it up, but let me just see if I can bring it back here.
Whatsoever you do, you may do it according to the will of God. Yeah, Mr. White Ignatius was a Protestant. That must be read through Protestant lenses, right?
Where did I ever say that?
The early church was Catholic, and if that didn't bother you, then you wouldn't have to wrench them out of their context. Want to cover a little bit more of the early fathers and this discourse, the rest?
He just goes on from there. He goes and reads from Robertson Genesis Catholic Study Bible. this is a response to Ignatius. There you go. This is the best Rome has to offer? Is there even a battle here? My goodness. Anonymous, well-known theologians, and a poor young man on YouTube, sitting in his bedroom with a 1980s rocker thing back behind him. We haven't quite figured out what that is. Somebody actually figured out what that thing in the background is, but I forgot what it was because I was a Christian in the 1980s, and so I didn't know. Sort of why I didn't know about the liar song. There it is. I don't make this stuff up. There's what he has. And you know what's going to happen now, since we're out of time, we've actually gone over time? You know what he's going to do? He didn't finish playing my video because he couldn't respond to it. So you can get blown out of the water on everything you said at that point, but if they don't then spend more time continuing to demonstrate that you're not even reasoning logically, that's where you must have had them. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Well, there you go, folks. What do we learn from this? Well, obviously, buyer beware. You really need to check out what people are saying. And I'll just tell you one story. And I can tell you that just recently we heard another version of this very same type of thing. This is why these people do it. In the second debate with Tim Staples, in Fullerton, California, there was a man who had converted Roman Catholicism. And I knew who he was, and he knew I was, and he knew I would recognize him by face. We had spoken before he converted to Roman Catholicism. He didn't speak to me about converting to Roman Catholicism. They never do, but that was the case. And he was at the debate. And I watched him, and other people watched him. You know what he did? When Tim Staples would speak, he was in the room and he would listen. And as soon as I got up, he left. He is not the only person that we have talked to who has said, well, yeah, I know about James White, but to be honest with you, even though I've listened to debates, I sort of just fast forward through what he was saying. That's why these people do this, because they know that their followers, they have to find some way to keep their followers from really listening to what we have to say. They just got to do it. And if it involves dishonesty, if it involves simply lying, Dave Armstrong last week, yeah, nobody can respond to my stuff, they just, or Steve Ray this week, yeah, that anti-Catholic, I won't even mention his name, even though he sort of forgot that the quote-unquote theologian did. He thinks Ignatius was a Reformed Baptist. Isn't that funny, folks? let's just all laugh at the Baptist. He's an anti-Catholic, you know. Actually, when you lie about folks, that makes you an anti-Baptist, doesn't it? when you lie about folks, yeah, I think Steve Ray is definitely an anti-Baptist. That's what you got to do. And I am so thankful that I can look myself in the face in the mirror in the morning, and I don't have to lie about these folks. I'm the one playing them. I can let them speak, and the more they speak, the more they hang themselves. I don't have to limit myself to little snippets. I don't have to lie about them. I can let them speak for themselves. That's what happens when you believe the truth. And that's why we do The Dividing Line. Thanks for listening. God bless.
Dividing Line has been brought to you by Alpha and Omega Ministries. If you'd like to contact us, call us at 602-973-4602 or write us at P.O. Box 37106, Phoenix, Arizona 85069. You can also find us on the World Wide Web at aomin.org. That's aomin.org, where you'll find a complete listing of James White's books, tapes, debates, and tracks. Join us again this Thursday afternoon at 4 p.m. for The Dividing Line.